Hello and welcome to Think Rant. I'm John Stabler, and today's the 28th of April 2011. With me, as usual, my co-hosts, Steve and Brett. Say hi, Steve.
Hi, Steve. never grows old.
I know, never grows old. Trev, say hello.
Hello. Hey.
And this week, we've actually got lots of interesting stuff to talk about, rather than debating things. We're not going to discuss last week's debate at all. I've put a moratorium on it. I forgot to mention that before we started. We are not allowed to discuss it. Starting off this week, there's something happening tomorrow, and I thought we'd hit that story first. Do you know about this, Trevor?
What?
Somebody's getting married tomorrow.
All right. Yeah, of course I'm aware of it. And I think it would be dreadful for anybody to actually be disparaging about somebody's wedding.
Correct.
But...
Okay.
We could celebrate a funeral instead.
We could do. Whose funeral have you got in mind?
Satya Sai Baba.
This is true. Man,
and I think, doesn't his name translate as something like holy, holier, holiest?
Yeah.
The obvious fraud and manipulative Hindu guru whose cheap tricks and cabaret-style nonsense have been misleading the gullible for many, many years.
I take it you're not a believer then, Trev?
Not so much, no.
The thing is, his name, Holier, Holier and Holiest, do you think he chose that because the name Ultimate Warrior had already been taken?
He got knocked out of Ultimate Fighting Champion in the first round.
Yeah. So, sorry, carry on.
You ruined the flow now, John, with your humour.
Sorry about that.
Oh, no, there was no flow. Just, he died. He had a funeral. Lots of people are sad. For basically a cabaret entertainer.
He was very cabaret. I mean, some of the miracles were very... Well, I actually did a blog post about this not too long ago, a similar sort of thing. I don't know if you guys saw it. It was a video. I believe it was BBC did a documentary about a team of people that went out to these remote villages, showed them this great magic, and then at the end of it said, look, it's all just a con. And so they're basically educating people about skepticism. So I just thought I'd get that in there. And but this Ali Baba or whatever his name is.
Sai Baba.
Sai Baba.
Oh dear.
I've really dumbed that one down, haven't I? He's unfortunately there'd also been some charges of sexual misconduct, is that the best way to put it? In the later years. So he's obviously seen the Catholic Church and thought, you know, I want to emulate that. So it's good to see that happening in Italy, India.
You really are a mess, like, aren't you?
I'm going to shut up for a bit. Okay, I'm going to shut up for a bit.
Has John been drinking?
This is my first glass. Honestly.
That's the problem. He's not had enough.
I haven't warmed up. No, that's the problem.
Haven't hit the sweet spot yet.
No. I'm trying. So, should we just go back to the royal wedding?
Yes, why not? Because I don't know much about the guy who's died, unfortunately, so it's sad that he's died, obviously, but clearly you two hold him in a great deal of esteem. The royal wedding. So, we all hung our bunting and got our union flags hanging outside the house.
No, but I got a union jack on my boat. Sorry, that was a little in-joke there, because everybody seems to be talking about flying Union Jacks, which
of course can only be flown
at sea. It's only a jack
on
a boat.
Exactly, yeah. But, sorry, we shouldn't try in humour, Steve, because no one gets it.
No one else gets it.
We just sound like a bunch of pricks on the radio.
That's a fair point. Well, we usually do anyway, so
we almost
hate
for that,
wouldn't we?
Yeah. Are you happy about this wedding? Do you think it's a good thing?
Do I think it's because, look, you know, I'm happy that you've got a couple who are getting married. I think, you know, good luck to them. Do I really care particularly about them? No, not at all. You know, I'd be quite happy to have a private wedding. That would be great. But I don't know. There's something which is ultimately British, I suppose, about a big pomp and ceremony of such an occasion. And I kind of quite like that. I kind of quite like that tradition. But to be honest with you, you know, I'd be quite happy if they just picked some Joe Bloggs off the street to do it, to be honest with you. I mean, don't particularly have a great deal of affection for the royal family per se, but I do quite like the ceremony and the pomp of the occasion.
You're a bit of a royalist then, are you, Trev?
No. I mean, no, not so much. I could just rant on for hours about why there is no need for it, and it's dreadful. The excuse people always give is, for every pound spent on the civil list, they bring in £3 or £4 in tourism. It's not really the point. I'd be happy for the country to carry on spending the money. It's the fact that they're part of the government, and they form a part of our implied constitution. I want a written down constitution.
Oh, well, something I agree with, definitely, a written constitution.
Well, they say if the military, for example, don't swear allegiance to the Queen, they just swear allegiance to Britain. Well, that's just the latest Prime Minister, isn't it? Well, no, it's not. If we had something to be proud of, like a Bill of Rights, like they have in America, you know, if there's written down rules saying what the least person in our society is entitled to, then we'd be able to be a lot more proud of it. There is a single convincing argument.
I don't disagree with Trev. Like I said, I'm not a royalist at all. You know, I'm really not. I do like the traditions and the pomps and stuff. You know, the state opening a parliament, things like that, Blackrod banging on the door. I love all that. That's brilliant. It's all part of the theatre of it. But I do agree with Trev. I mean, I would much rather see a written constitution and a constitution where everyone's rights are protected in law. And, you know, I don't disagree with Trev in the slightest on what he said there.
Are you going to be watching it, Steve?
I'll watch a bit of it. Just, I say, I do love the sound
whole five,
of the
not
occasion.
The whole 5 hour program.
Not the whole 5 hours, all the, you know, the aftermath, the highlights and what have you. No, none of that. I mean, I'll watch it from, I guess, my historical interest point of view.
The thing is, they're going to miss out the best bits because the cameras are going to be turned off for the wedding reception, obviously.
Yeah, and I would love to hear Harry's best man speech.
Yeah, and just to see what Prince Philip gets up to after, you know, a couple of drinks, like, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And, gets on the dance floor.
Busting his moves. Thought that would be pretty awesome.
So, Trev, what have you got planned for tomorrow?
Well, I've got a feeling that the family want to watch it because it's an event. It's kind of like joining in and participating in something, but I can't believe that so many people are going to watch something where they all know what the ending is going to be.
But
what's the entertainment? Okay, there's a possibility of a different ending, and that's maybe if there's some dreadful terrorist atrocity, in which case it's like watching a race hoping that all the cars crash.
But do you not watch Formula One?
To be watching. No, I don't.
Oh, okay. Because that's the only reason I watch Formula One, is just, you know, not because I want to see anyone die in a fire or anything, but because, you know, it's
spectacular quite crash.
Yeah.
There's,
right,
you know,
so
live and things
the non-fatal.
Non-fatal. Oh, yeah, if it's fatal, it is a tragedy.
Injuries, not
so, yeah,
like
I think what John's basically saying there is he would quite happy see a non-fatal terrorist attack tomorrow at the wedding. I'm not sure I necessarily go with that, to be honest with you, John, no. But, you know, that's a
like, they could use a rubber nail bomb or something. A non-lethal bomb. It could just, like, put out loads of bubbles or something, or foam.
Yeah, that would be quite cool. That would be quite cool. Although some people are allergic to that foam. I've seen some nasty results from that.
Okay,
yeah,
right,
it's horrible. But there's something which I've picked up on in relation to the royal wedding, which I think is pretty good, to be honest with you. And I'm quite happy about it. There are other people who've still not affected by this. And that is that the Syrian ambassador has had his invitation to the royal wedding withdrawn because of Syria's current position in the Middle East of killing their own people for speaking for democracy.
Hasn't there just been 200 or so resignations as well in the government? Over...
Really? I haven't seen that bit, so...
Yeah, so I think they're taking things a lot more seriously over there.
Yeah, you
and
know...
Looks like we are as well.
Yeah, I'm quite glad to see this happening, to be honest with you. I think, you know, it's... Countries like Britain have to make a stand and have to speak out against these sort of regimes, whereas we've pandered to them in the past and given them guns and sold them tear gas and shotguns, which they're using to put the rioters down with. You know, we actually need to make a stand and say, no, this is wrong, and democracy is right, and, you know, we support these people who are fighting for the democracy. I mean, on the flip side of that, the King of Swaziland has still been invited to the royal wedding, despite the fact of his absolutely atrocious record on human rights, where I think his country is ranked even lower than Zimbabwe in the league tables of nastiness.
Mm.
So, or higher, probably the better way of saying it. So, you know, they're pretty nasty, and he's still going to be there. You know,
well, why haven't we invited Robert Mugabe to the wedding? At least he got elected, didn't he?
Once, yeah.
It was a rigged election.
And we paid for him to get elected, didn't we?
I didn't.
Well, I mean Britain as a country paid for him to get elected. I believe they supported him when he first came to power.
And then he took all the land off all the white farmers and
said, I'm not playing your game anymore.
Yeah. So
what do you guys think? Do you think, you know, foreign diplomats should be invited, shouldn't be invited? You know, any thoughts on that at all?
Well, the question is, you know, if they did come to the wedding, why wouldn't we be arresting them? Is the other one. But then we'd have to start talking about diplomatic immunity.
Diplomatic immunity.
Call back to Lethal Weapon 2.
Yeah.
Nice.
Good spot.
Excellent. Oh, well, I've been really annoyed by all the weeks of pointless story-free build-up with the royal correspondents, or just the poshest-sounding, chinless, drooling git that a news organisation can shovel into a suit, standing on some random bit of pavement, declaring, it's only 5 days until that special carriage may drive over this very bit of road, and I'm here to ask the tarmac, how nervous are you about your role? Obviously too nervous to reply.
This is Nicholas Witchell, surely.
Yeah. I did think that was a particularly special piece of journalism, which I say in inverted commas.
But he's got...
when he went to the village where Kay Middleton's forefathers were from, four, five, six generations ago, when they were just miners.
They were a mine. Oh,
she's a ninth generation coal miner, you know.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, wow, okay, that really, really makes her a commoner, because, you know, somewhere in her past, her great-great-great-grandfather was a bloody miner. Do you know what I mean? It's ridiculous.
And have you noticed how that word has been resuscitated now?
Commoner,
it's all
over
the media.
Absolutely.
I thought it had died in the 80s, left to rot in the same kind of verbal graveyard as all the hateful racial slurs you can't get away with on the telly anymore. It's all over the place.
I would rather use prole or peasant, to be honest with you.
That's right. You're putting us in our place.
I am attached to the word prole. I do like it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we should bring it back, to be honest.
I'm not a commoner, I'm a prole.
In fact, that's it. I'm starting a Facebook group. Bring back the word prole.
Reclaim it.
Yeah.
Yes, brother.
We could also do that thing where if someone who's obviously upper class calls us a prole, say, hey, that's our word. Only a prole can call a prole prole.
And then there'll be a bunch of prole rap, and only true proles can sing it.
Awesome. Okay, we're going to move on to something slightly more serious? Or is this just going to be a comedy special by the sounds of it? Okay, I'm going
to
guess.
What a brilliant time to be followed by a second or two of silence.
Yeah. Thanks.
Couldn't have planned that any better.
I got one more bit that I've got to say about all the idiots who've been waiting already for days just for a place on the street for where the procession's going to pass by.
But that's all right, Trev, because they're all claiming benefits anyway, so it's okay.
But why are they there? They're not there to support the monarchy, surely. Are they there to get on the telly? That's fairly unlikely. They're just doing it to say that they were there. This weird nebulous sense of participation in an event as close to a fairy tale as can happen in modern society. Except it's not. They want to participate in a fairy tale. But for the past year, we've had the prancing, ignorant Goldilocks of David Cameron wandering through our houses, tucking into our porridge and messing up our beds. The big bland wolf, George Osborne, has been actually blowing down houses of lots of fired public sector workers, and there's many more to come. And they just have to be in those fairy tales? And what about, can you guess the true name of the lying, cheating, goblin, Rumpelstiltskin who promised to spin us gold but actually sold our firstborns down the river? There you go. Britain's in lots of different fairy tales. Bugger the royal wedding.
Trev, you should become a speechwriter. That sort of rhetoric is amazing. You know, you want to
I could
cheer, you know, Mr. Miliband there now on the spitting it out. But
I was going to move on. I was going to move on.
I think I saw him on telly.
Once. Yeah, maybe. That's why I think he needs to use a speechwriter.
I saw him off of the telly. But yeah, he was wandering around Tenby, I believe, at the weekend.
Oh,
either that or somebody who looks exactly like him. But Melissa said she was sure that he was supposed to be there.
Very good. I just want to say just one thing, though. I think some of the people who are actually camping out in the streets, as sad as it is, some of them are actual monarchists. I mean, they really do exist. There are people out there who actually do love the monarchy and want to be part of the occasion, who aren't just there, you know, for their, say they're in a fairy tale, that they actually really love the monarchy, which is quite sad, really.
Well, they're all stuffed now because tuition fees cost so much. There's no way that their successive generations are going to become middle class and have a chance of marrying into the royal family. So, you know, Kate Middleton has benefited from no tuition fees in the past.
But they might get to be their butler or something.
Possibly.
Yeah, or aim high.
I don't think they're high enough class. No prole can be a butler. You know this. I was going to move on, but I just also wanted to mention there was a threat. I don't think it was credible, but I wanted to mention it, of course, that the Westboro Baptist Church had threatened to picket the royal wedding.
Do you know what? As much as I hate the Westboro Baptist Church, I would actually pay their airfare for them to come over.
Don't say that.
Don't
say that, because I'll get an email off them or something. We'll take you up on the offer. Fly all 200 of us over.
If they're going to come over and protest about some bizarre upper class toff event like this and hold up a banner proclaiming God hates fags, and they're all going to say, well, why? They come and do my washing. When I was in school, what's wrong with them? They're wonderful.
I used to beast some fags in front of the fire.
You're now that's showing that you're not proles because you know the middle class lingo.
Only because I've read Tom Brown School Days
and Roald Dahl. Great. So you wouldn't mind seeing Westboro Baptist Church then?
Oh, look, I hate Westboro Baptist Church. I don't think I need to stress that anymore, clearly. But I would find it amusing if they were picketing outside Westminster Abbey. God hates royal fags.
Because, to be fair, it would be a smart move on their behalf. Seems as it's probably going to be one of the biggest media events.
Absolutely.
This, maybe, for the next couple of years.
Broadcast around all the colonies.
Well, plus, if you buy into the idea that they're actually taunting people to punch them so they can sue them, which is plausible, well, coming over here and protesting a royal event is probably going a bit too far, because an SAS sniper may well take exception to what they're up to.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're not quite as free as the States, and I think, well, these days, you get killed, you know, by a copper just for dawdling with your hands in your pockets.
I was going to say, or they might just say, he looks a little bit Asian, you know, and let's just kill him anyway. Let's chase him down the tube and shoot him, because he looks a little bit Asian.
Or he's wearing a backpack.
The guy that lost his job for making a joke about an airport?
Yeah.
our country's a lot more reactionary than they.
Oh, we're talking about
imagine,
the Twitter joke trial again.
Joke trial, yeah. Well, it's still ongoing and still being appealed.
So, yeah. I don't think Westboro Baptist Church will turn up.
It's a shame, but I'd also hear that the EDL wanted to have a protest there because there's apparently some extremist Muslim group had applied for the right to protest there as well, as if that they were ever going to be granted that anyway.
Were they there protesting they wanted to impose Muslimic law on people?
Yeah. The EDL were going to be there to protest the infiltration of Muslimics within the royal family, and how they want to, you know,
bring that Iraqi Muslimic law
Iraqi Muslimic law into the UK and oppress us all by their Iraqi Muslimic law.
Perhaps you should mention that that's a Sky News interview that you're actually talking about.
Yeah,
we're
to
not
be honest,
being that guy.
No,
I
we're
think
not
we've mentioned
that.
It before, though, haven't we?
And to be honest, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen that video clip, what is wrong with you? Who are you? You must be my you're my gran, are you? You're just listening because it's me. You don't actually go to YouTube. But no, I think everyone's seen that. I mean,
and if you haven't, just type Islamic law into Google and I'm sure it'll come up.
Yeah, it's a class video. Check it out. And it shows EDL for what we all know that they are. I mean, they do have this, well, I wouldn't say posh face, but they have this more respectable face. I can't remember the name of, what's the official leader?
I don't know.
He went up against Paxman. And to be fair to him, you know, he seemed to come across slightly rational, not just a complete racist. But that was all undermined as soon as a man on camera was complaining about Muslimic law. So
we're not being racialist.
We're not being racialist in the slightest.
No. Quite the opposite. So, are we going to move on to something else? Are you done on the wedding stroke?
Yeah. I think I've kind of done that. I think probably everyone's sick of it already anyway, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
I'm spent. I'm totally spent on the wedding. In fact, I was weeks ago.
Yeah.
That doesn't imply that I actually spent myself on anything to do with the wedding. I'm not that excited. I'm not excited at all. It brings me no measure of sexual release whatsoever to think about the wedding. And I am, in that respect, very different to everybody who's going to be cheering tomorrow.
Hmm. I think I'm more with Trev. I mean, I'm probably going to end up seeing bits, but only because it's on.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit down and avidly watch it at all. Like I said, you know, I'm interested in it from the point of view of social history, and I think, you know, there's a certain pomp and circumstance which I really like about, you know, our traditional culture sort of thing, I suppose. So yeah, I would quite like to see bits of it, but I'm not a royalist. I don't really care that they're getting married. I just hope they, for them, for the sake of them, they have a nice day.
Okay, we're going to move on.
It's probably a bit too late, but I just wanted to mention one thing. In the vague hope that it travels in a bizarre viral fashion and manages to make it to the ears of the guy who is doing the ceremony tomorrow, if he can do his best Peter Cook, and in this, the silence of it all, just shout out, wow, that would be brilliant. Get everyone on side.
That would be beautiful.
It's not going to happen, though.
We can hope.
We've got another... Well, there's another story I want to do. I'm sure Trev's got something. Steve's got nothing as usual.
Yeah.
We've got one big thing to talk about. But I'm going to get in our regular feature.
Oh, here he comes.
Yeah, our semi-regular feature. Guess the year, and still no theme tune. So,
or buzzers yet for either of us.
No buzzers. No, you just say your name. It's more intimate. Okay, you ready to play?
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, here we go. June the 15th of this year, the Diary of Anne Frank is published. This is great to watch. You see Steve thinking, and you see the cogs turning, and his face twisting in contortions.
Steve, 1951.
No. May the 2nd.
I'll listen to the next
one. Right, you're locked out of this next one, unfortunately. Yeah. May the 2nd, the first passenger jet flight route between London and Johannesburg.
Wow, Trev, obviously. Yeah. Is that 1970?
Nope.
You're
locked out of the next one, sorry. October the 16th, Limelight opens in London. Writer, actor, director and producer Charlie Chaplin arrives by ocean liner. In transit, his re-entry permit to the USA is revoked by J. Edgar Hoover. I'll carry on.
Steve, 1963?
Nope. July 25th, Puerto Rico becomes a self-governing Commonwealth of the United States.
With my brilliant knowledge of Central America. Is it Central America? I've got no bloody idea. But I'm from 1958.
So it's Central America and geography.
No, it's not 58. I'll continue. October 20th, martial law is declared in Kenya due to the Mau Mau uprising. May the 18th, Anne Davison becomes the first woman to single-handedly sail the Atlantic Ocean.
1961.
Nope, sorry. November the 1st, nuclear testing, Operation Ivy, United States successfully detonates the first hydrogen bomb, codenamed Mike, in the Bikini Atoll in the Pacific Ocean.
1958?
We've already had that, unfortunately.
Have we?
Yeah, Trev said it.
Did you say that, Trev?
That's really... Yeah, But that's really scary, that nuclear detonation, because it's got all the power and ferocity of nuclear detonation, but with the added misspelling.
Sorry. All right, pedant. June the 7th, Liam John Neeson, the Northern Irish actor, is born. How old is he? Do you know?
No? 1960.
Nope.
1953.
Nope. You're both wrong.
Is he going to thank me for that?
And this is going to be the last clue, I'm afraid. February the 15th, the funeral of King George the 6th takes place at St. George's Chapel.
Steve, 1952?
Correct. The last clue is always usually going to give it away, I'm afraid. So with the score now, I believe...
And the secret monarchist gets it. You've been talking a good game, but clearly...
all I'm going to say, Trev, is 2-0, basically. And maybe you should have a bit of a loser in there as well. You know?
Got him. Got him.
How does it feel to be beaten by Carl Pilkington?
That was quite good of you, Steve. I mean, your first guess, 1951, was almost there.
Yeah, because I knew Diary of Anne Frank was released, you know, sort of just within sort of 5-6 years of the end of the war, so.
Yeah.
But then the other clues kind of led me astray a bit.
Yeah, the passenger flight was a woman crossing the ocean in a rowing boat is. Okay, before we hit the main story, or before I let Trevor have a story. Have you got more stories, Trev?
Well, there's some stuff. But it's getting dark, and I've got to go turn my light on.
Okay.
But please, Kevin.
I'm gonna do this story because it's I think it's a bit interesting, but at the same time, it might spark some kind of chat about ethics. And this is recycling heat from cremation.
Ooh.
So this was an article published in The Guardian, and the idea obviously is people get cremated when they die, and instead of just wasting the heat that doesn't cremate them and wasting the heat that gets created from obviously the burning, use it for something.
Heating swimming pools, for example.
Exactly, that's one use. Heating swimming pools, heating the building itself, heating other buildings. So what are your thoughts on this? Because different councils have gone different ways on this. When they go and consult the public, very often, 80-90% of the public say, yeah, this is fine, what's the problem? But there's always that minority that seems to think it's, I don't know, how would you phrase it? It's disrespectful to the dead. Some people do have this very strange attitude towards death and things like that. So,
do these people also vacuum seal their deceased relatives so that... The ground and all the plants and the insects and everything can't take advantage of the rotting corpse? Because that's disrespectful? No, they're mental. They haven't thought about it and they don't like to.
No.
Yeah, dear.
But I was thinking, from the ethical point of view, why don't they just save the bodies up, right? Because surely burning them one at a time is not very efficient. Whereas if they burn, say, 10 or 20 of them all together, you're going to get more bang, you're going to need less activation energy, if you know what I mean. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think people would complain because they say, I get somebody else's ashes.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. People are a bit precious about the bits they get back, aren't they? The fragments of bone and stuff.
But do you
think... That's not Dear Darling John.
But isn't that quite similar, I mean, why do you want the ashes?
Well, I think I touched upon this with you the other week. I didn't actually use it as a story in the podcast, but we sort of talked about it afterwards. There was this family somewhere in the UK, I read it on the BBC, who had their relative cremated and then took bits of the remaining ash and had it set into jewellery, which they then gave to 11 family members. So they could always carry a little bit of Dear Uncle Johnny around with them wherever they went.
Was he a popular chap then, was he?
Well, evidently so. Either that or he just had a lot of kids, you know what I mean? Just.
But some people would say that's a bit macabre,
I would say it's a bit macabre, to be honest with you.
Yeah. But I'm just thinking, you know, can't we just, you know, if we bundled everyone in, personally, I think maybe this idea of keeping people's ashes on the mantelpiece or burying them is a bit pointless. You know, and if all you're going to do is go and chuck it on a football field, who cares really whose ashes you're chucking on the football field? Really? Or am I just looking at this from this horrible, simplistic, materialist, reductionist
I think, you look at it for a bit from there. In terms of the original question, I have absolutely no problem whatsoever with crematorium excess heat being used elsewhere. I mean, it just makes common sense to me, to be honest with you.
But that's what I'm saying. Common sense, then, would be why not chuck more in together and get... You know,
why not just eat them? Because, you know, at the end of the day, there's flesh there going wasted, isn't there? You know what I mean?
How often does it always come back to cannibalism?
that's less cows we have to kill and less cows we have to farm, so less methane in the atmosphere. So, you know, let's just eat the dead bodies.
So, just a serious question. Would you ever, you know, nibble on a human?
It would depend on the circumstance. Out of choice, no. Out of necessity, probably.
All right. Sorry, when you said depends on choice, I was thinking, it depends what sauce it comes in.
Absolutely, yeah. Bit of barbecue or, you know. It's, it'd be necessity. Yeah, if it's necessity and, yeah.
Okay.
I'd do it.
No, okay, fine.
But, in terms of the question, absolutely, heat swimming pools, heat schools, heat whatever, you know. Why waste the excess heat? Why waste any of the heat at all, do you know what I mean? Just, yeah, do it.
Have you got anything to add, Trev?
I'm trying to resist the innuendo of would you ever nibble on a human?
Don't resist, Trev. Succumb.
I mustn't. I've got no problem with everybody being thrown in together and then just them handing out a couple of handfuls of ashes because it is all symbolic. But if you tell people about it, then they'll, and they realize it at the time when they're all distraught and emotional, then it can eat away at them. It can lessen the impact of receiving the ashes. And they'd say, what's wrong with somebody at the funeral home just coming up and saying, we can't find any ashes at the moment. Here's a tube of extra strong mints. Go and scatter them somewhere and say goodbye.
I wasn't thinking that there'd be some secret, you know, grand conspiracy where people just got random ashes. You know, I was thinking, you know, is it about time that maybe people got a bit more pragmatic about disposal?
I think there should be a bit of pragmatism about everything that we do, to be honest with you. I think, you know, we keep hearing about the supposed energy crisis which is coming up and, you know, how we need to cut our carbon footprint and, you know, be more responsible. Well, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, run some pipes from the Krem to wherever, really. Just, yeah, use it. It's the right thing to do.
So, you know, but all right then. So what happens if they said, well, we could save even more money instead of using the Krem, just take the people direct to the local coal-fired power station?
Well, I think, that goes back to Trev's point about trampling on, you know, some poor deceased families. Feelings.
So do you think you could sign up to a communal, burning?
Well, I don't
give people the option. I think that'd be cool.
Give people the option.
You know, all these people that are going around telling us don't use plastic bags, buy a hybrid. All these celebrities that are meant to be going green.
Instead of being buried in a cardboard box, fire yourself up. You know, give something back.
So the important question out of all this, now we're talking about being burnt communally. Who would you like to be cremated with?
Probably, you know, someone like that Indian chappy whose funeral is tomorrow.
Why?
Ali Baba, you know.
Why, in case he performs one last miracle?
Yeah, absolutely. You know.
On you?
Yeah. It might rub off or something.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say Cheryl Cole, but I don't know, you kind of surprised me there. Yeah. What about you, Trev? Is there anybody?
The irony there, John. The irony.
Is there anyone that you'd want to take with you?
It depends how you mean that. If you mean, do I want to be in there with them? I'll be dead. I won't care. But if my death will serve the purpose of ridding the world of Cheryl Cole, then yeah, throw her in after me.
I have to, at this point, say Trev is joking. He does not want to take Cheryl Cole out because This is how, like, the Twitter joke trial and things start.
Yes, it is. That's
yeah. A good
point. Yeah, it could be a threat on her life now.
Which I think we should just rewind a little bit as well. When we're talking about terrorism at the royal wedding, we don't condone that at all.
I don't condone it.
We don't want to see it. We don't condone it.
I still want to see the Westbrook Baptist Church, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Wasn't it the case, though, with that guy that wrote some weird slash porn about the girls allowed? They took him to court because they found it so disturbing, but they couldn't actually prosecute him for it.
No,
because
this is
it
true.
Was clearly fantasy.
Yeah, and not just that. That wasn't actually the real reason he got taken to court. The reason he got taken to court was
he was using their image rights.
No, it was because he says, you know, he was talking about what he wanted to do to them, but he kept on leaving the ginger one out.
Oh,
I'm allowed to do ginger jokes because I'm ginger.
Only a ginger.
Fair dues.
Okay, we'll move on.
Yeah, why not?
Trev, have you got anything to say?
Yeah, okay, here's the thing. Have you noticed Obama finally provided the whining, brainless, right-wing US press with his birth certificate?
Yeah, but is it real? Because let's face it, he's the president. If he wanted one made up, he could just have it made up.
This
but
is
yeah,
true.
What are they saying now? They've been whining for ages, and when he produces it, what do they say? They say thank you, or sorry, or I wish I wasn't a pointless, greedy drone for the Tea Party. No, they're criticising him now for responding to their childish taunts.
This is true. The Republicans turned around and said, oh, I think he should be concentrating on the economy rather than digging out his birth certificate.
Pardon my French, they are a bunch of fucking idiots.
You might think the moral of the story is you can't win against the right-wing US media, but it's not. The moral is, try as it might, the right-wing US media cannot acknowledge its own stupidity. It's astonishing behaviour.
No, the whole thing is a nonsense. And in fact, I read a very interesting blog on The Guardian today in relation to this, in actual fact. Because, you know, it really, it's a non-story. At the end of the day, he shouldn't have to prove whether he was born in America or not. You know, that's irrelevant. I think it's just bad politics on behalf of the American right for trying to make this into some kind of story. But the article which I read was very interesting because it was by an American citizen who was not born in America, but is still an American citizen, and by that same token would still be able to stand in an election for exactly the same reason as Obama can.
But hang on, sorry, no.
Even if he was born in Kenya or Manila or wherever it is.
No,
they
sure,
think
but
he was
I
born.
Thought I thought that there was actually a constitutional thing.
No, there is. In fact, I should try and find the very article
because
now.
Because doesn't it stop Arnold Schwarzenegger? Because he might have been interested.
There was, no, because he's not an American. He's not born of an American family. If his parents had been American, right, or one of his parents had been American, then he could claim American citizenship as a right of birth, which is exactly what Obama could do, even if he hadn't been born in Hawaii, because his mother was American.
Ah, right, okay. Well, that clears that up.
I mean, by the same argument, John McCain, who stood against him in the last election, equally, as much as Obama, by the same rules, the right of playing, couldn't have been elected, because he was born outside of the United States. He was not born on American soil. So the whole argument is absolutely ridiculous. As I said, I'll try and find the article.
Wow, Steve, it sounds there. Like you've done some research or something.
Well, yeah, I do some reading in between working and stuff.
Oh, okay. No, that's good. No,
I just don't often come, you know, prepared with stories to go, but you know, I read around things.
Okay.
But yes, but this was very interesting because, you know, this guy was quoting, he said yes, that the Constitution does say this, and the reason why that was probably written into the Constitution initially was to stop English monarchists getting into power in the newly formed United States. But there was actually an amendment to the Constitution within 5 or 6 years of that, which basically amended it, say, if your parents are American,
you're good to go.
You're cool.
Oh, cool. Sorry, Trev, did you have, were you going somewhere with it, or were you about to just lay into Donald Trump?
Which I don't want to stop you doing. By all means, carry on, because he's a dick.
No, I don't like having a go at the disabled, and that haircut is clearly a sign. Dreadful, appalling.
It does look like he's put his wig on back to front, but because it's now glued, he can't do anything about it.
Bless okay. him. But no, I'm very surprised in a very patronising kind of a way, Steve, that you so thoroughly investigated that story. Brilliant.
But when you say thoroughly investigated, I only read a blog.
Yeah, but basically thoroughly equals you knew more than Trevor about it.
Yeah. But all the words, not just the pictures and stuff. So it's good stuff.
Thanks, Trevor. I'll take that feedback on board.
Look at him. He's beaming. He's absolutely ecstatic after that compliment.
Makes me feel warm and gooey inside.
Okay, we got 20 minutes left, and there's one story that we wanted to talk about. Before I get onto it quickly...
There is, but there's something else I've just seen which I very, very quickly want to bring
on,
up
go,
as well.
Go,
Very quick. David Cameron, calm down, dear.
Oh, no.
Oh, God, yeah.
I said we've only got 20 minutes. We could do that for 20 minutes.
We could do that for an hour.
just wanted to bring it up very quickly. How do we feel about that?
He's just a patronising git, but we already knew that. So, I mean, this story wasn't, it wasn't shocking to me whatsoever because it completely sits with his personality as I understand it. Trev,
but the point isn't that this Bullingdon Club arsehole behaved in a demeaning fashion yet again. It's more that he refused to acknowledge that it was anything to apologise about. I think it's dreadful. I mean, I'm sure I say arsehole statements quite often, quite often recorded now. But if I do say anything that's accidentally offensive, I hope that I'd apologise for it straight away.
If someone called you on it and said, you know,
I mean, for me, there's not only the fact that what he said was offensive and he should apologise for it, there's also the fact that he was just wrong in what he was saying in the first place anyway. So when he was being heckled, he's kind of, you know, skipped that over by just being a misogynist pig.
This is true.
That's a good point, yeah. Oh my God, they're about to find out that I'm wrong. I know, I'll behave like more of a twat, and then that'll be the story.
Exactly. Yeah, the fact that what he was saying was wrong, it's kind of been forgotten about the fact
perhaps
that he's just been a misogynist.
He's cleverer than we give him credit for, isn't he?
Or maybe he's just a dick.
Yeah. Maybe it's a rapacious dick.
Yeah.
And in case you didn't know, this is a liberal podcast. you know, just in case you got confused. There you go. All right. I just wanted to also apologise. I did actually post once that we were having Reese Morgan on this week. Reese unfortunately can't make it. He's a busy kid. Sorry, young person. He is in school, so you know that's okay. He's in his GCSE year, so we'll let him off. Hopefully, we'll have him on either next week or the week after. So,
come on, that's an actual good excuse. That's not like one of us who would say, can't afford it, I spent all my money on beer, and I have to stay in and do something else, or my missus won't let me, or some bit of crap that we might come up with.
I have to
work. Got GCSEs, back off.
Oh, that's a fair point.
That's pretty sound.
Yeah, and good luck to Reese as well. If you're listening, if you are listening, why are you listening? You should be revising. good luck in the exams, mate.
But because you need those GCSEs, because without them, how are you expected to flip burgers at McDonald's?
Precisely.
Because they've got high requirements these days. Anyway, we're going to move on. Do you want to introduce... Is anyone actually prepared, or am I going to introduce this story?
I can introduce it, because funnily enough, I've actually still got the story on my history from where I was going to discuss it weeks ago, but we left it till now.
Okay.
May have seen the recent BBC documentary on the story of a chap called Jono Lancaster, who has Treacher-Collins syndrome. And the difficult situation which this fella's in is that he wants to have kids. He's, you know, in a stable relationship, due to get married, and very much wants to have children. But there's a very real chance that any child that he has will also be born with Treacher-Collins syndrome.
I believe it's a 50-50.
I think that is it's a 50-50 chance. You know, which is quite a high percentage that his child will be born with the syndrome, which basically means that the facial bones don't develop in the correct way and leaves you without cheekbones, which sort of gives you a sort of droopy look to the face, which...
And of course, there's varying severity of the disease as well. Some of the people with Treacher Collins are born with breathing difficulties, and a lot of other related things that are related to not just the cheekbones.
Yeah, absolutely, not having the facial bones form correctly. quite right. I mean, it says here, while some sufferers have problems with hearing and facial features, others can be born unable to breathe. So, you know, this is a very serious condition, and it can be a very painful condition to treat as well, where, you know, bones may have to be extracted and stretched and all sorts of nasty things, really.
And to anybody who actually saw the documentary and said, well, I don't think he looks that bad, because I've actually had someone say to me, oh, I didn't think he looked that bad, really. He was bullied when he was younger, and so he underwent several operations and, you know, was in hospital a lot. He was given up for adoption originally. You know, that's how, you know, hard the parents took it. So what the documentary was about was his ethical struggle with the concept of screening potential embryos and fetuses, depending on what he did.
Yeah, because I think the real issue for him was, is did he want to have a child
mm-hmm.
who was going to be born with the same condition as him and have to go through the same, you know, same things he had to go through, and probably still has to go through as well, in all fairness. I think that's the real issue there, isn't it? Is it right to bring a child into the world knowing those?
Knowing there's a very high risk that it's going to be a problem. No, I agree. That's one issue. But obviously the other issue is that if now that there is, modern medicine, there's new technologies out there that can actually help people screen embryos before they're implanted or fetuses once they are pregnant. There is this, the idea of seeing, you know, have a look. If it's no good, get rid of it. You know, that's at a very, very basic level. With the first question that you brought up, Steve,
mm-hmm.
I think it's very important. And I'll ask Trevor first, what are your feelings on people having children knowing that there's a very high chance that they're going to be passing on a very severe and debilitating disease?
Well, there's an awful lot of different ways you can approach it, and people are desperate not to offend anybody. I can understand that. But if there is a way to avoid passing on any kind of disability or impairment to your child, and you don't take it, then you're condemning your child to have that, plus anything else that life throws at them. We probably all remember that there was a deaf couple that desperately wanted to bring a deaf child into the world. Well, that may be great for building a deaf community, but for all you know, that child might be born blind as well, and you chose the deafness.
And this is true.
Going around just choosing to add what are impairments to people because you think it's character building or makes them part of some kind of community is asinine.
I actually think it's morally reprehensible. I go a lot stronger than that. To willingly deceive somebody of a whole sense, and it's a very important one. Hearing, I don't think people appreciate the importance of it. I know you can get by without it, but I think that's completely beside the point. To willingly maim somebody in a way. Because, you know, it would be the same as taking, you know, a child from the womb and then perforating the eardrums or doing some sort of procedure to stop the child from hearing. I think it's completely, as you said, asinine is the word. But not just that, I think it's selfish in a way.
Yeah, it just speaks to the vanity of the parent, and it shows a lack of caring about the child that they will have. But I listened to a radio show called Ouch from the BBC as a podcast, which is all about disability. And they're brilliant on there. They tend to reclaim words like spaz and cripple, and are very liberating about the idea of dealing with disability. But on the last one, they had a conversation with a British comedian, a comedian from LA, and one from Australia, and all three had disabilities. And I think the LA one was saying that she was proud of her disability. And the British guy said, "You mean you're proud of how you deal with it, right?" And she said, "No, I'm proud of my disability." And the British presenters also just couldn't work out exactly what it was she was saying she was proud of. It's a disability. It is an impairment in your ability to do something. And there are lots of things to be proud of, but surely being chuffed that you have a major obstacle in your way in the abilities that you have can't be something to be proud of.
No, I agree.
Implies it's something you want to inflict.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think you can be proud of overcoming your disability and becoming, you know, successful or successful as you want in your
inspirational
life.
Inspirational is another.
Yeah, absolutely. Then absolutely. But yeah, to be proud of your disability, no, that's just. I mean, she's American. She doesn't understand the English language probably, so you know, but doesn't quite realize what she was saying.
So yeah, but as you said, you know, if they're reclaiming words, you know, that's a good thing, because there does seem to be this idea, and this goes to about people trying to avoid having disabled children by using these different methods. Apparently, people are concerned that it's going to stigmatize disabled people, which I personally think is unfounded. I there's no evidence for it. I don't see how that by avoiding a disability, trying to avoid disability, we are somehow, you know, saying that disabled people are worth less. I think we're just choosing to, you know,
give someone a better start in life, basically, and a better life, better quality of life.
Well, there was a bunch of opinions that were expressed that were a bit odd, but the only one that I found really appalling was actually said by the producer of the documentary. Jono was discussing about the genetic assessment and destruction of afflicted embryos, and he wondered about all the disabled people who would have been aborted. And the producer added, "Well, you would have been destroyed with that procedure," something like that. And it stopped him for a second, and it shocked him. But that's a big problem for me. It's an insane way of looking at it. The idea that you wouldn't have been born, would you, if you try and get the most healthy embryo, and therefore it's wrong because you're rejecting potential children, makes no sense. Potential children are not children. If during each one of our respective conceptions our fathers had coughed during sex, two things probably would have happened. One, our mothers may have enjoyed that unexpected twitch a little bit more. And two, a different sperm probably would have been selected. We're all of us very, very unlikely. If you want to try and view history under the unending scream of all unborn potential people, your imagination will spin loose into the gutter of ignorance. Every ejaculation is genocide. Every successful conception is still multiple murder.
Yeah,
but it's clearly nonsense, and but it's the result of applying that type of thinking.
Yeah, I mean,
it's childish and pointless.
I kind of agree with you there, Trev. Well, I do agree with you, actually, not to any extent. I just agree with you. I mean, on the issue of where we are in Jono's case, then, you know, we have technology. We have the ability to screen, and I guess we either have the ability or are pretty close to the to having the ability of actually, you know, genetically engineering, which I know is a bad term, but, you know, to get rid of these sort of syndromes, these genetic disorders. And I absolutely fundamentally believe that if we have the opportunity to do it, we should do it. And that's not to say I don't value a disabled person's life anymore because they have a disability. I mean, my mother is deaf, for example, and, you know, she lives a very full and happy life.
But, I mean, the scare tactics make you believe that...
But she would rather have... You know, she would rather... I mean, she lost her hearing after having it, so she knows what she's missing. So she would much rather have her hearing back, you know, and if there's an opportunity of her being born with a hearing because the genetic malfunction has been taken away, I'm sure she'd jump at the chance. Do you know what I mean? It's a no-brainer, really.
I just think it's a bit of a non sequitur to say that because we're able to stop more people with disabilities being born, that the existing
it's
people
somehow prejudiced
we're gonna,
against
what,
disability.
We're
going
to stop
people.
Giving them the vote or something like that. I think it's completely nuts. And
yeah,
quite right.
That was one aspect of it. But that's to do with he was keen for some reason on the idea of the destruction of, you know, embryos. He was willing to throw them away because they were just embryos. But he seemed quite averse to the idea of, you know, doing
abortion.
Checking a fetus that's already, you know, developing, checking that for any genetic problems, which you can do from 12 weeks onwards. And then, obviously, just terminating if there is an issue, which is a far simpler procedure than PGD, which is what he was considering. And... you know, he was, for some reason, he was against that. He was against a 12-week fetus, but he wasn't against throwing away, you know, embryos. So, but this goes back to abortion and things like that, doesn't it, really?
See, I've got a feeling that a lot of religious conditioning in society may have made him feel that getting rid of an embryo, because it shares the same disability that he was, that he grew up with, and possesses, is the same thing as aborting him, because he's not up to scratch, and it would have been the case. And like I said, it's just backwards thinking.
I mean, he didn't come across as a religious person, but I think this idea that there is a moral problem with embryos, it's born out of things like Catholicism. The easiest way for me to explain that is, if there's ever anything about embryos on TV, a debate on, you know, like what's the Sunday morning program, the big questions or whatever, who do they wheel on? They don't wheel on a bunch of scientists or a bunch of philosophers, you know, moral philosophers. No, they bring on a Jew, two priests, and, you know, and some guy wearing a turban.
Yeah, but the point of the Sunday morning program is for a religious perspective. That is the point of it. But they quite often have Lord Wasser's chops on there as well, don't they?
But what I'm saying is, why is there...
That's a brilliant name.
Lord Wasser's chops. You know what I mean, Lord Wasser's chops.
But what my point is when it comes to...
He's Jewish, by the way, as well.
When it comes to ethical considerations, why do they feel the need to wheel out priests? I don't... That, for me, is completely nuts. Surely you want
it's
to
because
be...
of the it's the devaluation of philosophy in general that has happened in our society. Obviously, I'm about to say that as a philosophy graduate, but
please give me a job.
Well, yeah, please. They tend to think that there is no qualification about dealing with ethics, and well, the qualification of analysing argument is a pretty good one.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, and there are professional philosophers. There are people writing about the philosophy of ethics that would do a much better job. But the program would be shorter, because that guy would be saying, you can't say that, that's nonsense, for this reason. Mm. If you had somebody there pointing out all of the various
logical fallacies, yeah.
It would be a very short program.
But maybe the public may get better informed. And I think this goes to the heart of what I think is something that's quite important, and that I think that we should be bringing back philosophy back into schools, including critical thinking studies.
Oh, yeah. God, I'd love that.
I could want to go back to school. That'd be so cool. Going back to Jono, what did you think of, Jono's reaction? Did you think he was spot on? Did you think he had anything of interest to say? Trev.
Totally. I thought he acquitted himself brilliantly. He was clearly not a guy who wastes hours of masturbatory intellectual contemplation, but he was working through all of the facets of the problem. And at the end of it, he was very pragmatic. And they're going for the three-letter acronym that I forget.
PGD, which stands for pre-implantation genetic diagnosis.
Yeah. And they'll probably have a couple of tries at that, and once they've tried that, then they may have a different perspective on just trying naturally and then testing at 12 weeks. But sure. Yeah, I'm not going to judge them on what they do. I wish them all the luck in the world. They clearly put the thought in.
Okay. I mean, I got something to add to that. I noticed we're just about to go over our hour. Are you okay? Okay.
Yeah.
Are you alright with that, Trev?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. All right. Okay. The thing is, and this is maybe of interest to some people, is actually their story I have been through personally as well. Because my wife has a genetic disorder, just as he does. I wouldn't say it's necessarily, you know... Well, no. I think it, in some respects, I could say it's just as bad as his problem.
It's just as bad. Maybe not as noticeable.
Maybe not as noticeable, but debilitating. Yeah. Maybe more debilitating as she gets older. So we've been through the exact same thing. So obviously, this was of interest to me to see how somebody else, looked at this and how they went about looking at the options and appraising the options. And the PGD, me knowing what for a start, when we were looking at it, PGD wasn't available to us. It's only been since this current government's come into power and through cutbacks, believe it or not, that they've now started opening up this method to more people. Before, you had to apply to use PGD. Certain diseases, very severe ones, like Huntington's disease, you got a free pass on. It was no problem. But if it was another disease, you had to apply to an authority who would then evaluate you, and then they could at any point say, no, sorry, you're not ill enough, or your genetic problem's not bad enough to warrant this. So it wasn't available to us in the end, so we had to use the route of testing the fetus. So it's great for him that he now has the PGD option. Where unfortunately it was, because it's not guaranteed, and because it requires IVF, it's quite expensive, and it would have been very expensive for us, prohibitively expensive. So I had different situations, but what Jono maybe didn't quite grasp, well, he didn't seem to grasp in the documentary, maybe he did grasp it off camera, was that PGD is not, it's only a 50, it's the chances of it working aren't so great. And they had one example of a couple who I believe were lucky and it worked first or second time for them. In previous documentaries I've seen on PGD, there's couples that have been frustrated up to 6 times. And that's a lot of emotional turmoil to be going through, especially when it's costing you 6, 7, 8 grand a pop.
So if I ask you a question, Joe, if you don't mind, in terms of if the option of having a PGD on the NHS was available to you, would you have taken that route?
I think if it was available on the NHS, I think why not? Because surely it's better to screen the embryo before you get pregnant, because pregnancy's not easy. I mean, I've seen women suffer terribly with morning sickness, alone. That's enough to put anybody off.
Mm-hmm.
So I think PGD on the NHS is a good thing for the people having it. I'm concerned about how much it's going to cost the NHS.
Wouldn't,
but if they only do it becomes in debilitating conditions. Sorry.
No. So I was going to say, wouldn't it be a case of the more they do it, the cheaper it would become because the process would become more efficient?
I'd hope so. That sounds like some kind of capitalism. But okay.
They'd save money being spent in the future on treating the debilitating conditions that would have been born without it.
No, I completely agree with that. And if it was available to us, then yeah, we'd use it. But I am... It's new, this available on the NHS thing, it's new. I need to look into it a bit more because obviously I may contemplate another child. So obviously I'm going to have to find out about it myself. Are there going to be hurdles? Is there going to be barriers that you need to overcome to get
just
it?
Just how debilitating is your genetic problem?
Well, how bad do you want me to be?
Means testing it, it seems a bit... this isn't about... Because I think when you talk about having genetic desire and any sort of control over the genetic development of your child, there's always the argument thrown at you straight away, which is it's rubbish, but it's still thrown at you straight away of, playing God and trying to create the master race and all this. And I don't see
what,
this.
What, ginger kids?
Well, yeah.
You've always got that to throw back in there.
Yeah.
I don't see this as... being about a master race, or, you know, eradicating disabilities for the sake of eradicating disabilities. This is about giving a human being the best possible chance in life.
Okay. So what if the best possible chance in life was making a child a boy, because boys enjoy a better quality of life?
That's just nonsense, John. As you're saying it, you can see you're not even serious about it.
So this is what I mean. So you're against sex selection, but...
We've had this discussion before, haven't we, John?
We've spoken about
design of children, and I don't agree with... And we did this one to death on the podcast then. I don't agree with design of children. You know, if you look at a country like China, where everyone wants a little boy, if they had the chance, every child born there would be a boy, and there'd be no women, which is ridiculous. So
I can tell you logically why that comparison does not stand up.
No, that's all right,
because
Chris.
Okay.
No, carry on. Me joking.
Let him bully you.
But just to help you out, it's not just that I don't feel like you're quite right not to feel like, and here's the reason why you don't feel like it. The thing that everybody wants to have a boy in China because they would get on better, those are social pressures that you're reacting to. That's not purely down to the medical well-being of the child. It's because of the society in China and how it works. So those are false things to be taken into consideration.
So,
I told you.
Yeah, so, you know, and I guess, you know, exactly that, you know, if there was a medical reason for it, absolutely, I've said this before, for a cosmetic reason, you know, not have a child born ginger, I don't agree with that.
But that's what I mean, is how do you draw the line? You've just got this arbitrary line that you say,
yeah,
we've
done this before.
We got Trev on it now, so I want to ask Trev. What do you think, Trev? Do you think people should be able to choose the sex of their child? What if they've had four girls and they're desperate for a boy?
Hell no. No, that's appalling. What is that last girl going to feel like? I always think that when there's something like four of one sex and then one last one of another sex, what does that child number four feel like? Oh, I was the last one. They didn't want. They stopped after the next one.
It's
appalling enough when it's just naturally selected like that. The idea that you can employ science to select those kind of pointless distinctions
But you could say something like, you know, you had a child with Huntington's disease, and then you went and used PGD to make sure the next child didn't have Huntington's disease. So what, the child with Huntington's disease is going to feel like, oh, they didn't want me?
No, the child with Huntington's disease is going to think, crikey, this is tricky to deal with. I'm very glad that you didn't have another kid who had to deal with this. Surely.
I think being a woman is hard to deal with, you know, so that maybe they might have some kind of empathy.
As you remember from your time as a woman.
Pre-op, you know, pre-op. It was difficult.
That's just Friday nights.
We better not go down this road.
Jonathan, love you long time.
Okay. Are we done on this now, or did you have anything you wanted to add about it?
I don't.
No?
No.
Oh, okay. Trev, was there anything you picked up on the documentary that you wanted to bring to the forefront?
No, I think we've pretty much covered it, and I just ended on a slur on sexual behaviour, so I'm very satisfied.
Basically, you're happy whenever you get to have a dig at me towards the end of the podcast, every week.
Yeah.
It seems to be, a pattern emerging. Yeah, okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're going to wrap it up then, because we're 10 minutes over. But it's been a blast, guys. It really has been a blast. And we look forward to next week. Just a few shout-outs. We should always do the announcements at the start of the podcast.
We should do, shouldn't we?
But I always forget. I get carried away. But yeah, check us out. It's thinkrant.blogspot.com for the blog. I'm planning on posting there this week.
Wow.
Or this weekend. Maybe when the wedding's on, because there's nothing better to do. Or find us on Facebook. Just look for Think Rant and Twitter.
Yep. And as we've mentioned earlier this evening, you know, we're talking about how I like British traditions. There is one British tradition which I'm not a fan of. That's first past the post voting. So next week, you have the chance to have your say on that. And to be honest with you, if you're happy with first past the post voting, that's fine by me. But please go out and vote next week. If you're in Wales, you're voting for the Assembly and for your Assembly member. If you're in the rest of the UK, you'll be voting on the referendum to whether we should switch to AV from first past the post. So please, please, please go out and vote.
Definitely, everybody go out and vote. Yeah. Well done, Steve. Thanks for getting that in. Unfortunately, next week's podcast is going to be really awkward because it's on the 5th. Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll have all already gone out and voted, and so will all of our listeners. Okay. But we won't know the result, so we can't talk about it in a way that's.
Maybe we could make up a swingometer, and have like you know some kind of.
Oh, Steve! I just had a terrible.
I don't want to know what you were thinking.
Oh no.
It's we'll the way that to record you... it's a commiseration and a celebration episode, maybe.
Yeah, it's the way he put his hands on his hips when he says swingometer.
Oh no!
Yeah, yeah.
Oh we'll no! Is he going to stick an arrow on it?
No, I was just thinking about you know unleashing the full leather gimp suit. To be honest with you. bit of talcum powder, maybe a Vaseline squeeze in there, you know? Lovely.
And this week's podcast is just a couple of damn minutes too long.
Yeah, as usual. As usual, 5 minutes too long. But yeah, guys, get out. Make sure you vote. I know it hasn't been the most interesting campaign, but, you know, please vote, even if you vote for those horrible Tory people.
Yeah, I mean, even if you're an idiot and you vote for first past the post, then that's absolutely fine. But just go out and vote.
Okay.
Yeah, on the advice of David Cameron, who won his position with AV.
Yeah, because obviously, you know, without AV, you'd have had David Davis as Prime Minister currently.
Right. Not necessarily a bad thing. Okay, well, thanks very much for listening, people, and we will catch you next week.
Good night.
Cool. Good night.